Hello and welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. I'm Patrick Gilbert, the executive director of Venture Media Group. Joining me as always is Danielle Emmerman. And joining us today, special guest, Melissa Nadasdi, who's one of our account strategists at Venture Media Group. Isaac Radansky is stuck in a snowstorm, which is kind of funny to think about. But he wasn't able to join, so we pulled in Melissa to join the podcast today. And I'm really excited because she's much more insightful than Isaac is. But how are you guys doing? Melissa, how are things?
I'm doing very well. Staying warm and not leaving my house.
So smart.
Doing better than Isaac, probably.
Good. Danielle, how are you?
Doing well. I can't complain. How are you, Patrick?
Amazing. Before we jumped on, we were outlining a few different topics of what we were going to cover today. And right before we jumped on, we all hit pause and had a separate thought to go grab tea. And I want to hear your thoughts on, because it ties into this topic that we're going to be talking about today. So Danielle, what are you drinking currently?
Currently, I have a lovely cup of black tea. And on deck, I have some green tea from Japan.
Danielle, where did you get that tea from Japan?
Well, you know, I've been on a Japan kick lately. Got a lovely Secret Santa present from someone at the company, Danny. Little Amazon Explorer experience. You know, my apartment is very quickly filling up with merchandise straight from Japan. So come on over, and it's like you practically went there.
So you have two cups of tea ready. Do you, like, have a pot of hot coffee next to you? Like, what's the deal? Or not hot coffee. You have hot water, whatever you use to make tea?
I wish. It's a long walk away in the kitchen, but I used to, in fact, have a hot water boiler in my room in college, so.
In the middle of this podcast, you're just going to get up and walk to the kitchen, and that's totally going to be fine?
Yeah, I might take you guys with me.
Oh, all right, cool. Well, that's nice. I appreciate that. Melissa, what are you drinking?
I am drinking green tea. No, I'm drinking Earl Grey tea.
Those are very different.
I was thinking about how Danielle will be drinking green tea, and I thought that that's what I would be drinking too.
Earl Grey tea, love it. I have some sort of combination of green tea and chamomile, which I experiment a lot with, like, combining different tea bags, and sometimes it works out. This time, it's fine. It's okay, but it's going to get the job done, and it's warm, and it's absolutely freezing outside, so.
What's your all-time best combo?
Oh, that's a good question. I really like the lemon ginger mix, but you can obviously get that. But if you do that with just, like, straight up black tea, like lemon ginger with, like, black tea is a really good combination. I don't know. I go, like, you can add mint mixes with almost anything. So yeah, I don't know. Try it out. It makes something that's otherwise pretty boring a little bit more interesting.
I love that. I'm going to try it.
Give it a shot. So today we wanted to talk about stressful situations and how to manage them. 2 weeks ago on the podcast, Danielle and I discussed how to create structure in an otherwise chaotic agency environment. And there's this balance between having everything be regimented in your day and in your week, and on the other side, where there's absolutely no structure and you just, like, come in the morning and say, what am I going to work on today? And I think that there's an important balance that we need to strike as an agency somewhere in the middle there. Because if you're on the one end where everything is ironed out and you're using, like, a project management tool where everything you're going to do is by the minute, and then you're going to eat lunch at this time, and these are the meetings you're going to have, that seems great in theory. But the minute that something goes wrong and an urgent situation comes up and a client calls that their website got shut down or something, then everything goes off the rails. And I think when you get used to that extremely structured environment, that the second something goes wrong, it's much more stressful. It amplifies the level of stress that comes through. But on the other side, you have to have some level of structure. You know, you can't just come in and say, okay, well, like, what fires am I going to put out today? Because ultimately nothing's ever going to get done. So as we kind of dive into this topic a little bit more, I think it's natural to figure out, what are we really accommodating for in terms of fires that come up that we need to put out throughout the day? And how do we manage them with a clear mind not acting on emotion and acting with rationale and logic to ultimately be able to find a solution. And it's not an easy thing to do. And managing stress, especially in real time as stressful situations are unfolding in the workplace, is a skill that you can never get perfect at. You just have to try to improve over time. And one of the first things that comes to mind here is just the general relationship with clients. The stakes are very high and they're relying on us to run their ad campaigns. So at times we're a punching bag, at times we have the weight of their business in our hands, and that comes with a level of stress and anxiety. And then there's just a lot of uncomfortable conversations and situations that come up along the way. So Melissa, I want to get your thoughts, because I've truly admired the way you've handled some situations like this with some of our clients. But what do you think leads to these stressful situations? And what are some of the tools that you've kind of picked up along the way to be able to manage them?
Well, I think some of it comes from just who we are as people. I am a naturally stressed person. Not naturally stressed, not like every day I'm stressed, but when I'm worried that people will get upset or I'm worried that I did something wrong, like naturally I just get stressed, and like it's been that way all my life. Patrick, I know you made us all do the Myers-Briggs test before we joined, and I'm a classic example of a J. I'm a judger. You know, I like everything planned out. I like to know exactly what I'm doing when I'm doing it. And so when, you know, kind of like you said, when something comes up that doesn't fit that, I get stressed and I get frustrated and it becomes chaotic. You know, and some people don't have that problem. Some people are very easy at taking things that they come. Some people, you know, the spontaneous people that can just like get on a plane and go anywhere and have no care in the world. Like,
and you're saying you're not that?
Not at all. Not in the slightest. How do you know that you packed the right thing? Like, do you have your passport?
I'm with you.
Does somebody know what plane you're on just in case something bad happened? I don't know. Like, these are the things that I think about, at least. So I think some of that comes from just inherently who we are as people. And then I also think that some of it is luck. Sometimes something bad that happens in an account will coincide with something bad that happens in the client's personal life. And that is unlucky. Sometimes something bad in your personal life will coincide with something with a, you know, an email that the client sends, and that's unlucky. So with that, you kind of just have to take everything as separate situations, and you have to try not to let it all blend together, which is much easier said than done.
I like that. And you just covered a few different things that I want to dive into a little bit deeper. To your last few points there. So you have situations where stress is amplified on the other party, where something is going wrong, something's coming up, and there's a bit of emotion that's dragged into the situation because of external variables. And then you also have that as well. Now, I think that first part, being able to manage that and really see things for how they really are, with, you know, a client being upset because there's something else that is happening in their world, that's kind of an empathy question and topic. The second part of it is more about internal emotional strength and being able to almost create silos around different issues that you're dealing with. And I want to really dive into that, because that is a very, very important skill to be able to look at and develop over time. Being able to go from one thing to the next, not just in our work, but also in our lives, and being able to create those hard transitions where it's not just that, okay, I'm working on this account and it's stressful and now I need to go work on this other thing and I need to separate those two. But I think the exact same thing happens in the divide between our work and our personal lives. So do you have anything to share there as far as what works for you, or any sort of situations that you've learned from in terms of putting something aside and being able to let that exist there and move on to the next thing with a clear mind?
I think one thing is like physically changing something, like getting up and walking around, or you know, sometimes, you know, working remote, it can be hard to separate work time from, you know, relaxing time. And kind of just like having one thing that marks, okay, it's the end of the work day. And, you know, maybe making tea. You're going to do that every day at the end of work. And that kind of marks the separation. But I guess like during work hours, it's kind of like, I'm going to go get a glass of water and then focus on this one thing. And that's kind of the time to decompress and put the whatever's happening in your personal life, whatever else is happening with work, kind of behind you, and then focus on like the task that you have at hand. So that's kind of how I try to separate things.
Danielle, what about you? I know that you're somebody that is often moving around the office. Every time I turn around, you're in like a different, like at a different table and a desk, and then you're in the back room. So I'd imagine that you're similar there, but like, do you have anything else to add on that?
Yeah, I definitely find that like if you're in the same spot, like in the same mindset, doing the same work, like at least trying to get the same work done for a period of time, like you're going to burn out at some point. And I think your mental health kind of starts to sabotage you in a way and sabotage the work that you're doing. And getting up, for me, that's what I do throughout the day to refocus and recalibrate. I definitely find that if I'm sitting in the same place for more than an hour, I start to just like get bored and distracted naturally. So for me, it's moving around. For Melissa, you know, maybe it's getting water, tea, maybe playing with your dog, I don't know. But like making sure that you take those small breaks to kind of allow yourself to breathe and like refocus.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's an increased challenge when working remotely. One thing that I've really struggled with is this idea that I feel like I'm just staring at my monitor for all hours of the day. And it's very impersonal because you're just clicking from meeting to meeting and you're just staring at a big light bulb with different pixels that look like faces on them. And ultimately you're not really moving. And I think that becomes a big strain. Like you don't realize the impact that walking from a conference room back to a regular office or a desk or whatever, it is seriously a psychological benefit because you're able to build, to bake in those natural transitions. And I don't think that happens enough unless you are self-aware enough and practicing that level of awareness to be able to bake that in. And that's something that I try and do throughout the day, but I'm far from perfect at it.
Something really interesting that I learned last week or a few weeks ago, I'm not sure, is that putting ice on your face, which sounds so stupid, can really help like when you're stressed or like panicking or anything, because it like simulates being submerged in water, which kind of slows down your body's like nervous system and metabolism and all your systems, I guess. I don't know how biology works, but it like slows everything down. So I guess putting ice on your face kind of makes your body think you're doing that. And it kind of helps kind of slow everything down. I haven't tried it yet.
It sounds like you're describing waterboarding. That's how you're baking in transitions, is by torturing yourself in the middle of the day.
It makes everything else not seem so bad.
That's true. That's not a... No, I can see that, though. I all jokes aside, I can see that actually really helping. I mean, there's a lot of people that talk about meditation practices throughout the day, or it's not that far off from going for a brisk walk, because it's not just the idea that you get fresh air and all that other stuff, but there's a physiological impact to... It's essentially exercise. Like when you go on a quick walk around the block, you're forcing your body to essentially reset. And I think that that's very beneficial. On the side of clients specifically and working with them, ultimately, they're the customer. And I hate to do the whole like the customer's always right thing, but we always have to assume that we're wrong. And we have to be a punching bag at times. What is that experience like? And how have you been able to overcome stressful situations where a client is coming down hard on you?
It's hard, especially when you're the type of person that like doesn't want to be wrong, which is most people, I guess, don't want to be wrong. But, you know, at the beginning, I found myself getting really defensive, not like directly to the client, but like internally trying to like justify it, justify everything. When in theory, like that's not going to do anything to help the client relationship. It's not going to make the client feel better. You know, they want to hear that they're right and that you will fix what they think you did wrong, which is hard. And, you know, sometimes they're really wrong and then you want to correct them. But I think you also kind of have to realize what the client's personality is like. Some clients like don't want to hear it. If they're just not interested in learning about kind of the complexities of what we do or like the analysis that we do, you just need to kind of accept that these are changes that they may want to make. Maybe they don't want to make changes or kind of whatever they want to do. Because, you know, in the end, this is their business. We get so invested and we want the best for them. You know, I find myself being like, you know, like I want my client's website to be better. But if the client doesn't want their website to be better, why do I care so much? You know, if the client is fine, like this is their business ultimately. And if they're happy, shouldn't I be happy?
I think what you hit on a second ago is an interesting point about understanding what they really care about. And something that we've started to do a while back was after we have our first initial phone call with a client, where we ask them, you know, we go through the whole rundown, tell us about the business, what are the goals, everything to kick things off. As part of our strategy meeting, we'll talk about like, okay, like what also, in addition to just hitting these performance metrics, like what else do they need that they may not have said specifically? And this is going to the empathy conversation. Because every client will say, you ask them, you know, what are your goals? And they'll say, well, I want to be profitable and I want to scale my business and all these other things. Okay, fine. But also what else? And they're probably not going to admit it or really know it. And we probably psychoanalyze this stuff way too much. But there are subtle things that you could pick up on where it's, okay, well, this person, you know, it's a large company, it's a large brand, and they're a marketing manager that has to answer to somebody else, and there's components and there's elements of that. And ultimately, that person's probably not going to work at this company forever, and they want to be able to know that we're helping them grow in their career, and they're padding their resume in a way. So there's all these like micro goals that that individual has, and we should be somewhat aware of that as we're thinking about helping them do their job better and what information they need to succeed. And that's one person. A separate person might be a business owner that all they ultimately care about is being able to offload the work so that they can spend more time running their business. They're not going to care as much about all the different reports that we can send them and all the different meetings that we want to have with them. The reason they're hiring an agency is because they don't have the time to do this and they want to be able to offload this. And they ultimately just want to have someone that they can trust and they don't want to deal with it. And they just want to know at the end of the month how they did, and that's fine. And those two people, if you just take them at face value, will tell you that their goals are the same. But when you really break it down, it's not. And understanding where they're coming from day one, from when you meet somebody, is extremely important, because when everything ultimately hits the fan, that's how you're going to be able to prioritize and find whatever solution is going to ultimately resolve the situation that you're dealing with. So if it is somebody that works for a larger organization and they have a boss and their boss has a boss, if performance drops in the campaign, there's multiple things that need to be done. There's, okay, well, not only do we need to come up with a plan of action, but we need to deliver a plan of action that our client, our point of contact on the client side, can also turn around and convey to their boss. And we might not be able to be a part of that conversation. So there's a certain way that we would package that messaging and package that strategy. And it would look very different if we were conveying that in the same situation to the actual business owner. And I think that's a really, really important piece of the puzzle that we often miss. But what sort of like additional context on that do either of you have in some of your experiences?
I feel like you were just telling me something similar to this the other day when I came to you, and I was saying how I was nervous about a new client that we had. more money, bigger name, you know, so I thought higher stakes. And you're like, no, it's actually just a little bit different. A business owner would be so concerned about every little dollar being profitable. You know, a small business owner, like, this is their livelihood, which can be a lot of pressure. But in a bigger business, these people are going to be paid their salaries no matter what. So there's less of a worry.
And it's not to say that you are held to a lesser standard when working with a larger brand. It's just that the micro goals of the individual are different. You still need to hit those performance metrics, because if you don't, that person could ultimately lose their job. But what we're really doing here is we're separating performance, which I think is, regardless of what the situation is, performance is always something that is the number one priority. That's why they ultimately come to us and hire us. The second part of it, though, is what are the additional goals that we need to reach? And in this case, it's really, what do they care about, or what is their mindset? And the reality of it is, like, Friday after 5 p.m., you're probably not going to hear from a lot of those folks that work at that larger brand. And now you can factor that in, too, because now think about, like, if you're coming up to Thanksgiving weekend. A lot of people that work for larger clients, they want to plan ahead, and they want to have everything in, like, their ducks in a row, and they want to be able to, like, by Tuesday, be able to mentally check out for the entire weekend and know that everything's good for Black Friday and Cyber Monday and whatever else, and they can go to their families. But the small business owner, if they're the point of contact, they might be too busy to plan ahead. They might be the ones emailing you late on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving saying, hey, what's our Black Friday plan? And being able to, like, prepare for all of those different situations is extremely important. You can try to have those conversations and anticipate it before it actually blows up in your face. One thing that I found extremely interesting related to this topic that you've shown recently, Melissa, is this ability to take a stressful client situation and put it aside and still persevere and do great work inside of the account in a situation where you were basically yelled at by the client, right? They came to you and said, like, I'm very unhappy about how things are going. And a lot of people would let that break them. And it would force them to be overly stressed and not be able to do good work in the account. And that's generally when more mistakes happen and everything compounds. And you get to a point where you have, like, you actually can't create that sort of headspace to do good creative work. But you were able to break through that and do the opposite, where all of a sudden we're talking back and forth on Slack, and this is just an hour and a half after we got off the phone with the client, and you had this very creative hypothesis about what was actually going wrong, and you dove into it and you found a solution that really, really helped turn things around rather quickly. Number one, do you recognize how unique that is? And two, do you have any, like, tips or advice as far as how you were able to put aside the emotional aspect of the stress to be able to go and do the hard work?
One, not really. And two, because it's my job. I don't know. Like, it wasn't as bad because I didn't, you know, it wasn't surprising. I anticipated it. But I was able to, or at least I tried to, think about what somebody else in my position would do, you know, what Patrick, what you would do, what Isaac would do. I feel like I do that a lot, you know, especially with, like, a difficult client. I'm like, would Patrick stand up for himself? Would Patrick, you know, say that he's right? Or would Patrick, is this time when Patrick would kind of, like, step off the pedal a little bit? And so I guess that's kind of, like, the mentality that I have sometimes, where it's like, is this the fight worth fighting? Like, and sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes you don't want to argue with a client over stupid things.
I agree. And I think as part of it, at the end of the day, just realizing that there's nothing personal that should ever be taken away from this. And that's a really important piece. We get so bogged down into, I'm taking offense to this, and I worked really hard on this, and you don't appreciate it. And ultimately, it's like, look, everyone's just emotional and no one has control and they're all frustrated and everyone's just venting and it's kind of comical if you step back. And I think then, as part of it, you realize these situations, they come up again. And that's when you can really handle them in a more sophisticated way. If you can look at this and say, hey, this is actually similar to another situation I dealt with a few weeks ago. And turns out, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that. Nobody died in the end. It was fine. It wasn't that big of a deal. And that's really how you manage these, is drawing similar, you draw from similar experiences. Danielle, I want to ask you, like, you operate in completely, like, you're our content manager, so you have a different worldview on all of this stuff. You have a lot going on at any given moment. You've had a lot thrown on your plate, and it's basically on you to prioritize and to execute and to hack your way to success. How do you manage all the stress that is constantly thrown your way?
I'm really the wrong person to ask because I don't get stressed. Like, it doesn't, like, that emotion doesn't register with me. But I'm not saying, like, I'm on a pedestal. Like, I have anxiety, but I think stress and anxiety are very different. So I do what is in front of me. Like, I look at my calendar and I know, okay, this week, like, this is what I need to execute on, and I execute on that. I think something that I learned in high school, because that was stressful, that was a stressful environment, I learned not to look so far ahead. I think that's really what triggers a lot of stress. When you look at what's on your plate and you look at your month ahead and you see you have, like, all these projects that are due, all of these exams, I'm, like, using my high school example, but, like, that for me definitely triggered stress. So to just, like, scale back and stay in the present, I think, is something that really helps manage that emotion. Because at the end of the day, it's all emotions, right? Like, stress is an emotion, anxiety is an emotion. And I think much of what we feel when we manage clients is it comes down to emotions. They're feeling very apprehensive about the decision to hire us if performance is not up to par. That's why they come to us in the first place. They have a performance issue. They want to, you know, earn more profit, revenue. They want to see better conversions, higher conversions. So when that's not meeting their expectations from the offset, like, it's scary. And especially for smaller businesses, like we mentioned earlier, it's like their entire livelihood. There's so much on the line. So I think the work that we do is inherently coming from a very emotional place on both the client and on our end, because when you're the receiver of other people's emotions, like, it can trigger something within you, and it's very hard to separate, like, that emotional component and that, like, need to do a good job, that need to meet the client's expectations with, like, just separating that and doing the work. So I think staying in the present, just to bring this all back, probably helps manage stress and definitely helps me, but it's easier said than done, especially when you have clients. Because I don't have that, and I think that's definitely the varying factor that probably makes it a lot more difficult.
You have clients. Isaac's your client.
Ugh.
And he's the most stressful. He's the hardest to manage.
Yeah, I just don't, like, listen to him, though. I think that helps.
That's good. Well, I'm interested to see what he says when he hears that. You bring up a good point, and I think that's a really important piece of all of this, is taking a look at what's really in front of you and taking a step back and kind of looking at everything and looking at the landscape. This has been a pretty stressful week for me. I've had a lot going on, but I don't know, a little bit earlier today, I was thinking about this one email that I have to get back to. And it's something that's been, I've been putting off for a week now. And I'm already envisioning me saying, like, hey, so sorry for the response, for the delayed response. And then, like, trying to think about, like, all these different things that I've been putting off that I'm still putting off. And it's like, actually, it's not really that much. Like, at the end of the day, this email isn't that important. Like, I'll get to it. I'll get to all these things eventually. But ultimately, it's like, oh, like, this isn't really that big of a deal. So being able to take a step back and think about, what does it really matter in the grand scheme of things? If a year from now, our lives will be drastically different based on what's currently happening in front of me. And it's really hard to do. You really have to try and practice that, especially when things get tense and things get frustrating. clients call you and they're screaming at you and all this other good stuff that always happens. So there's ways to manage it. I think with it, the only thing that you can do is take it in stride and know that it gets easier in a way. There are situations that I was not able to completely handle when we just started doing this. I would get more emotional, and stressful situations would take much more of a toll on me. And you do that enough times, you get the reps, and you turn around and you say, oh, I've actually developed this skill. I can now take it on the chin and move on, and I can get better, and I can be more empathetic and more self-aware. And just knowing that every situation is an opportunity to get better and to develop your emotions in a more strong way is kind of what helps me power through some of those moments. And I just encourage both of you and anyone else that's listening to try and keep that in mind. All these situations do get easier to manage with more experience.
What do each of you do to recharge and like fill yourselves up after a very taxing day?
Alcohol? No, so I think there's that transition that I spoke about earlier, and being able to really put something aside and move on to something else and really commit to not picking up your phone or opening your laptop and doing something that's completely for you. And sometimes it's harder to do than others. Sometimes it can only happen if you go and do like a very intense workout, because that's at times the only thing that'll take your mind off of the stressful situation you had that day. Sometimes it can be as simple as going for a walk or playing a game or watching a movie or whatever it is you do to unwind. You just have to be able to tap into that, but you have to commit to it. And you have to say like, no, I'm treating me today or this evening or whatever. I'm closing up because I know I need to recharge, and I'm going to get a good night's sleep tonight because of all these different things that are happening. And treating yourself in a way, saying, I'm not going to let this continue to stress me out any longer, so I'm going to close everything out and I'm going to do something that I enjoy that's going to benefit me and my emotional state. Melissa, what works for you?
I like to lay in bed. I feel like I'm just like sitting all day. I'm very upright. I'm just kind of like relaxing, like letting my muscles relax, even just for like 5 minutes of just like doing nothing, not looking at a screen, kind of laying there, just helps so much. And then, you know, up and do something else, or watch the news. And, I don't know, I shouldn't watch the news. It just makes stress even worse.
No one should watch the news. Good. Yeah, I think, you know, whatever it is that works, like there's, you know, to lay on the ground or whatever and just stare at the ceiling and know that this is me not working anymore, and knowing that you can kind of put that aside for a few minutes, and you just have to try out different things and see what works, and you have to be able to figure it out. Danielle, is there anything that you do that's different that helps you unwind?
I drink a bottle of wine every night. Actually, on a serious note, I feel like this was something I really struggled with when I first started working. I was like, I didn't know how to like take me time, like, and do something that like actually refilled me and like re-energized me. So these are a few things that I've discovered over the past few months. One, cooking really helps me. Mm-hmm. It takes my mind off of things, so I have a lot of fun cooking, and that helps. Two, I like to do Pilates. So I light candles and I listen to music and I do Pilates and I move the way that like my body needs to, and it's great. And then I take walks. So I would highly recommend all of the above, but especially the bottle of wine. That's my go-to.
The walking thing really has something to it. If you take a look at, if you just like read a bunch of biographies of successful people, like one of the most common trends you'll find is that a lot of these people really enjoyed taking walks. And I think it's really important physically, emotionally, mentally, just like it checks all the boxes. So it's something that's like Isaac and I were actually just talking about this yesterday. We kind of just like went on a long walk through the neighborhood, trudging through snow, and almost got lost and were late to a call. But just being out and having that reset moment is extremely beneficial. Amazing. So thank you guys for joining. Really appreciate it. We'll wrap up now. But this is the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast. Really appreciate you jumping on. Do you have any advice on where to hide a dead body?
Yeah, I'd say on the pager, Google.
Third page. I didn't even know they made one of those.
No.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.